Welcome to another episode of the Data for What Interoperability Edition podcast. We hope you've been having fun learning about the multifacetedness of interoperability, but also how it applies in our day-to-day lives. In today's episode, we get to explore the place of artificial intelligence, otherwise known as AI, in creating and driving interoperable systems. Why do this? Well, it's impossible to talk about digital and data evolution without mentioning AI. As AI continues to rise, it becomes increasingly critical to create systems that can talk to each other, as well as generate the quality training data needed to keep algorithms accurate. But with this rise comes a host of challenges that we feel like we aren't really hearing enough about, particularly when it comes to the technical infrastructure needed to support intelligent algorithms and the citizen data rights that still need to be protected and upheld at the same time. In today's episode, we'll delve into the overlap between AI and interoperability, discussing in particular the challenges and choices surrounding data storage and what that means for access, rights, and scale. The episode aims to peel back the covers on the data that will drive AI's development behind the scenes, highlighting that the implications of where data is stored, whether on-site or in the cloud, reveal key geopolitical, legal, and technical considerations that shape sustainable development in myriad ways. We'll have the chance to chat with Fernando, DG's Director of Software Development, as well as Jesse Wright, a PhD student at the University of Oxford. Together, they'll talk through how we look at the tech side of deploying sustainable, scalable, and well-supported digital solutions. If you love more of this and you'd like to learn more, we've got a great chapter on this in our white paper, Demystifying Interoperability. Fernando, I'll kick over to you if you want to give a brief introduction.
Yes, so I'm the Director of Software Development at DG, and we've been working with governments and organizations for the past 17 years, developing interoperable platforms, trying to make them as sustainable and as pretty as possible. But the key there is the sustainability, and that the definition of sustainability has evolved several times in the past few years. And now we have a new guest on display, and it's these AI systems and how it changes the way we work and the way that we plan our projects.
Welcome, Fernando. Jesse, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm wearing two hats at the moment. One is as a researcher here at the University of Oxford in a group working on ethical web and data architectures led by Tim Berners-Lee, the creator of the web, and Nigel Shadbolt, who's an expert in AI and web technologies. So in that group, we're trying to work out how to make architectures for the web that support personal data, support better societal structures, and work well in the age of AI. With my other hat, I'm working at the Open Data Institute, leading a project called Solid. The goal of that is to give people back control over their personal data by giving you pieces of personal cloud storage where you store your data in a structured manner so that it can then work across applications in an interoperable manner, and so that you can have access control over that data.
Great. Thank you, Jesse, and welcome. So Fernando, I'm going to turn to you to frame this conversation a little bit. I talked a little bit in the intro about technical infrastructure, which can sound a little bit intimidating. What exactly does that mean when we talk about building the technical infrastructure that supports interoperable systems?
From our perspective, what that means is just understanding the landscape of the systems. The way that we work with the organizations is trying to assess what they currently have, what are the future plans, and how that fits into connecting these systems. What we find is that there are different levels of preparedness involving many aspects, from the hardware, from the specific legal frameworks that regulate in a certain country, what's the definition of data sovereignty, what are the different data access levels. And I do think that the infrastructure question is usually the easier to answer because there are many, many possible answers from having your own local infrastructure to have a third party run it for you. But it's more of the data governance and how these systems are going to negotiate the data that is being exchanged to make sure that it's correct, on time, and so on. We face many challenges, especially in working with legacy systems. The governments have usually a mishmash of different systems that have been acquired at different moments in time and that hold different data. And just trying to harmonize all of this, it's the biggest challenge. So a key part of understanding what you need to put in place in the infrastructure is understanding what you have and where you want to go, because sustainability has to be at the heart of it. All of these systems are as good as the data they hold. And if a system is not working or is not fitting the user needs, it's going to be dropped. And in the whole potential house of cards that is your interoperability framework, you need to be careful of all the links in the chain.
Thanks, Fernando. So let me stay with you again for a second, because I think there's a big gap between an understanding of what's going on with interoperable and regular systems and AI. What's the connection between data, AI, and interoperable systems?
I was thinking about this in preparation for this. I was thinking of what is my hope? What is the thing that we are struggling the most? And, you know, when a new technology or when a breakthrough happens, we put some hope that it can solve our long-standing problems. And there are many efforts using AI to create adapters between the systems that are easier or more resilient. From my experience, a lot of the potential here is in assisting the technical teams that work at governments to, for instance, conserve some institutional knowledge. For me, and from my experience in the past 3 or 4 months that I've been working at it, there are developer tools such as Microsoft Copilot, X, or Cursor that leverage these large language models to assist on the maintenance of these systems. I see potential for governments and government teams to improve or to be able to maintain these systems that sometimes are not well documented or that the original vendor is not in the picture anymore. And these interoperability frameworks depend on each of the links of the chain to make sure that people trust the frameworks, et cetera. I hope that this can help.
Great. So turning to you, Jesse, to give a bit more color to this, there's a lot of data ultimately that's required for algorithms to function and a number of challenges in managing this data. Can you talk a little bit from your perspective, having worked on the Solid protocol and in other areas? How do you see AI enhancing managing permissions and interoperability between systems? How do we make that link and make that link safely when it comes to data and AI?
I think there's 2 big parts of this when it comes to interoperability. The first is what Fernando was already talking about, in that emergent capabilities of LLMs are making it much easier to do the data pipelining process and to convert the formats that we have for data. So I think LLM type technologies are going to significantly improve the developer pipeline for making that happen. On the other side of this, what we really want to be able to see is having well-formatted, standardized data across countries for different sectors so that I have the capability to draw in all of my personal data from governments, from insurance, from everywhere in industry, and create this personal profile of myself that I can immediately run algorithms for. We have all of this data available to do really useful analytics that benefit the individual, but that data is not available to us. So what standards like Solid are pushing for is to help make this data accessible to the individuals so that we can then run either existing machine learning algorithms that have existed for years or more emergent AI technologies on top of it to get real personal insights. And the only way we can do that well is with a lot of personal data accessible to the individual and in a standardized format, so we can immediately run those algorithms without having to develop custom AI systems for everyone. When we're now talking about access rights and things like consent in order to access this data and to then reshare this data, policies like GDPR, especially in Europe and UK, start to become really important. What we've observed with the current presentation of GDPR is it doesn't acknowledge that you want some level of semi-automation and some level of standards to allow sharing of data in a slightly more automated manner whilst still representing user intent. To summarize, we need standards for data at national and global scales, so it can be used well and we can run analytics on it. And we need good standards for data compliance and data governance so that it's easy to share it within nations and globally.
Thanks, Chessie. I think these cover the constellation of rights and accesses and issues that we were already dealing with before AI came into the picture. So something else that strikes me on this topic, reminding people of the things that they can't see, is also about how data is stored. People may think this conversation that we're having on this podcast about storage doesn't really apply to them, but then you see increasing stories about people deciding that they don't want data centers in their communities because of the environmental impacts, and not thinking about how when that smart algorithm on Amazon.com recommends the perfect product to you, all of the processing information behind that has to go somewhere. So that's actually a little bit of how we got here in terms of talking about storage. So, Fernando, we've had a lot of really interesting conversations in Ethiopia about to store or not to store and where storage could or should be. Can you walk through in brief some of the pros and cons of storing on site in servers versus on the cloud and what that would look like?
So several aspects here, and it depends on the context. Sometimes the cloud solutions look tempting. They have less upfront costs. They offer higher availability. You don't have to run your own things. And they can be usually good solutions. But there are a few issues with it. The main ones that we found is that governments, especially when it's about government data, need specialized services that are governed differently. There could be legislation within the country that forces the organizations that want to hold data to hold it locally. And that's usually very hard in the cloud with the main services. We've seen increasingly that local telcos are starting to offer these services, not at the level of an Amazon or a Google Cloud platform, but that can help to solve a little bit of this. But the expenses can be hard to control. The governments have different ways of paying for these services. And we had some cases of deploying our applications in the cloud for a certain government. And then for any reasons, they can't pay it. And it's pretty straightforward that 90 days later, the data is going to be gone. And we have a hard time recovering it. And I think that the risks for a government, especially as administration change, as priorities change, it's very high. The main one for hiring cloud services outside the country, beyond the data sovereignty, I think it's on the access to foreign exchange. Usually these services are denominated in US dollars or euros, and governments, especially in developing countries, have issues with the access to foreign exchange. And it's one of the reasons that they might stop paying. And truly, Amazon doesn't care what are the conditions for you to access foreign exchange, and they will stop your services. And that increases your dependencies very much so. There are also a bit of technical aspects here, like the latency can be higher in the cloud services against having something local. But the local is also, it has its own challenge, especially in maintaining this infrastructure. What we've seen is that, especially in governments, there are efforts to have their own data centers to make sure that they can control this. But those plans take a long time. And again, there are sustainability concerns. The issue of infrastructure goes way beyond just storing the data, but how you maintain it there, how you make sure that it's private, that it's backed up, and there are proper business continuity plans to make sure that the data are available.
Thanks, Fernando. I think you covered that perfectly. And that's really at the crux of what I feel the most worried about, because the connection there is between if your reliance on your storage capacity is tenuous, what does that mean when we're talking about algorithms being used to shape decision-making, critical decisions about who gets housing, who gets benefits? So turning back to you, Jesse, on that topic around how AI is involved in decision-making, how do we maintain a balance between personal data ownership and AI's and algorithms' need for large data sets to function efficiently?
Excellent question. And I think to continue the discussion on the previous question and then take our way into this more personalized cloud storage and data ownership idea. A big important point in my view around sustainability and ensuring ongoing access to data is having good standards and good data portability mechanisms around those standards. One of the W3C working groups that's just emerged is called Linked Web Storage. And it's trying to do precisely this. It's providing a standardized interface for reading and writing data on the web that is either going to be stored with some well-known cloud provider, or it can be in your custom data centers. The point there is we have a standard for reading and writing this data so that you're able to change out the backend at any point in time, and so that your systems and your applications can work with this standard regardless of where the actual data is stored. To then turn this more into the personal data ownership angle, standards become even more important in this context. By having a standard for storage, so that when you go across applications on the web, your government portal, your social media, everything you use, they refer to this same storage provider. They can read and write data in an interoperable format so that you can, for instance, update your address and everyone gets propagated that same information. When we're talking about personal data ownership, what I care about is having this user-centric view of data and a standardized way of reading and writing it so that everyone can still access it if you give them the permission to do so. And that's then the privacy angle we're talking about, is having the right access control mechanisms in place so that when you're sharing data, you can explicitly make contracts with the parties requesting it to say, for instance, I give you permission to take my health data for the purpose of training your systems to do studies around heart health, but I do not give you permission to do that for training around marketing. That's what I really see as the important role of data ownership, is not data ownership to keep your own new walled garden. Like, we've got walled gardens where TikTok has data that they're not making available to anyone else, and Amazon has data that they're not making available to anyone else. The point of personal data ownership is actually to break down those walled gardens, allow you to control your data, and allow you to give that data then to AI systems that can really make use of it.
Speaking of walled gardens, and this is super interesting, I didn't know of all these efforts. What is big tech or the private industry saying about this? Are they willing? What is the acceptance so far?
There's definitely a tension there. Companies have enjoyed having control of data for the purpose of targeted advertising. However, data ownership for companies is now becoming a liability with legislation like GDPR. And data is becoming a lot less valuable to them with this legislation as well, because they're no longer able to do targeted advertising, for instance, out of the box. What we're seeing, especially with more startup style companies that are wanting to build an app or wanting to build some kind of smaller service, they're looking for these storage technologies that don't require them to be the owners of the data, because that takes away their compliance costs, it takes away their auditing costs, it takes away a lot of their insurance costs as well. So for smaller players on the market, this is actually great news. And for larger players, it comes at a time where legislation is creating these kind of pressures anyway.
I think that's such a perfect segue to this next open question to you all, because I think so much of what we've been talking about this episode so far around data storage, AI development, what happens to personal data and rights within that is heavily influenced and influencing global politics and business interests. So Jesse, Fernando, how does this affect our choices between using cloud storage, keeping data on site, and other structures that we may not even be using yet?
I think that it comes back to the question of what are the local legislations and what are the intentions of the governments on where they want to store it. But most of my experience is based on governments that are on the process of defining what the data governance frameworks are. Sometimes there's nothing in place. And I think that ultimately is about where the data needs to be stored and how comfortable they are with where the data lays or the data is stored. From what I've seen, especially things that are connected to the production or the citizen services, they are moving towards having things on site. There are many, many flavors of this. Sometimes they have national data centers, like it's the case in Nepal, and there's a mandate for the different ministries to store information there. Then there's some different approaches like Ethiopia, where each ministry holds their own data, and they've been investing heavily on getting ready for storing all this data. But it depends. It depends on the context, and it depends on how comfortable a government is where the data is located.
Extending on that, I think it's not just a matter of where it's located, but who's in control. Because a trap that a lot of governments have fallen into over the past few decades is getting themselves vendor locked in to particular contracts with service providers, where the government has not been able to access a large portion of the data that they've been storing with these vendors as a result of the contracts that they've signed. It's what keeps us tied to legacy systems. And it's what makes it very difficult to have that data interoperate with other systems and become accessible to other parts of government, to other parts of industry, and to other users, because it's locked into these proprietary formats that have been agreed to as part of these vendor contracts. So we should be pushing for governments to require that their new national data assets and their new standards around data are built on top of existing open standards, so that there is the ability to have portability and there is the ability to have communication between systems, and we don't have these traps that come with vendor lock-in.
It seems like even governments don't read the end user legal agreements. They just click accept and then they are surprised at the end.
Absolutely. Wow,
that's the reason why there's a whole movement around too long didn't read, right? How many regular consumers, and then we expect governments as constrained, and especially governments in the global majority who are as resource and time constrained as they are, to be reading the fine print, which is a little depressing, but I would love us to end on a forward-looking note. Fernando, at the top of the episode, you talked about sort of what gives you hope. So I'm curious for both of you, what hopeful role do you see AI playing in the evolution of interoperable systems? And how connecting more systems, connecting more data can also further drive things that algorithms are capable of over the next decade and beyond.
I am hopeful. And, you know, with every technological breakthrough, it's difficult to see what's real and what is hype. But I do think that this one is real. It won't solve all our problems, but it can help. What I opened with is the sustainability aspect in a very prosaic way, like who's going to be in charge of adding this field to this database so we can track more and more effective information, and being able to solve that aspect of how does a government or an organization maintain a system long after the vendor has deployed the final version and moved on to other things. How do they keep those systems that can become key in things like production, health, citizen services? Because what I've seen is that even trivial changes can take forever to be done or require an international consultant to come and change one parameter in a database. And I think that this can really power up the contributing to the local capacity and contributing to how governments maintain these systems and let them evolve. For a long time, what we found is systems that have just a backlog of things that they want the system to do and little progress on that because of multiple reasons. But a lot of it is trying to maintain this poorly documented system. And even when you have good documentation, you have to maintain it. It has to evolve. And understanding that these systems that are interacting with each other are live things, that the needs change, the systems change, and you have to be able to adapt to these to sustain them on time. The worst thing that can happen is that a process that has been digitized becomes paper again. It's just one of the aspects of many of the sustainability. But the one that I've seen suffering the most is how you keep the systems updated. And I think that the new wave of AI tools can help with this.
Yeah, I think that's a brilliant set of points. And to that, what I would love to see, and I'm optimistic in seeing, is this also drive the ability to extract structured and unstructured information from a range of databases, have a set of global standards for representing that data and really starting to get the insights that I was talking about earlier that we can get when we have access to a lot of data, because there is so much we can learn about ourselves, so much we can learn about others, so much we can learn about the world around us. The AI technologies get us so far, the algorithms get us so far, but what we need to get the deepest insights is data to feed those things. So the more structured data we have out there, the more information we have to learn from, the better all our lives are going to be. Assuming we can get all of this somewhat in the control of the right hands, which I think legislation is in its teething periods, but I have hopes that it's in the right people's awareness to make it happen.
I think that's a perfect place to end. Thank you so much, Fernando. Thank you, Jesse, for helping to break down what is quite a complex series of topics that are interconnected and making them more accessible. And thank you to our listeners for joining us for another episode of the Data for What podcast. For our final episode of the special season on interoperability, I'll be joined by my fellow colleagues from DG, where we'll share perspectives on what sustainable technology actually means. You don't want to miss it. It's going to be a very fun conversation. If you'd like to listen to our earlier episodes and read our latest white paper on demystifying interoperability, please click on the link in the bio. This episode was produced by Wakini Njogu, Anna Chuter, and me, Beverly Hatcher Mbu. It was edited by Joseph Wagner and Wakini Njogu, and our theme music was created by Mark D. Hatcher.